It's the kicky music that means it's time once again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I am your thankfully temporary host, Stephen Thompson. Today on Pop Culture Happy Hour, the Toronto International Film Festival. We have got a large chunk of the team speaking to us via remote from Toronto, which is apparently someplace north. And today we will be talking about said festival, about film festivals in general, about new movies that we will be excited about in the months to come. Then, seeing as how we are situated in a northward direction, we would talk a little bit about Canadian popular culture, consider this our CanCon. And as always, we will wind down the show with what's making us happy. First, allow me to introduce an expanded Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. First of all, I am sitting in Washington, D.C., and to my left is a familiar face.
Hey, it's Glenn Weldon. I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And then everyone else, aside from our producer, Jess Gittner, everyone else is in Canada. Linda Holmes.
Stephen Thompson.
The panelist has become the host. And now
That's right.
I can ask you who you are.
I am the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, which is called Monkey See, and we are up here coming to you from the studios of the CBC, so thanks to Canadian public media.
And Canada in general. Now, you said we. That means that somebody else is with you. Trey Graham. Who are you?
Hey, I'm Trey Graham. I edit movies, theater, and other pop culture coverage in general for the NPR website.
Now, I believe there is one more person with you. We're going to blow some minds. We've got five people speaking on this, and so Glenn and I are going to shut up pretty soon to let you guys talk about movies. But who are you?
I am Bob Mondello, and I review movies for All Things Considered most of the time.
Well, and more importantly, Bob is a critical member of the NPR TIFF team.
He is our actual
radio person, representing for actual radio.
Nice. Well, it is a pleasure to have you here, Bob.
Thank you.
Linda, Trey, and Bob, I'm going to throw this discussion to you, but I guess the first question would be, seen anything good?
Yeah, I certainly have. I mean, one of the things that was interesting about my festival is that the first movie that I saw on the first day is a film called Rust and Bone, which stars Marion Cotillard, and it remains one of my favorites that I've seen. So I would single out that one. I wrote recently on the blog about how much I loved the Joss Whedon Much Ado About Nothing. I really, really loved that. I'm not going to hog all the good ones. So, Trey, what have you seen that you loved?
The movie I saw that was most artistically satisfying and was perhaps the most inventive thing I've seen so far is going to be one of the holiday season's biggest blockbusters, at least one of the fall's biggest blockbusters, and that's Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina. Talk a little bit about that.
She's going to beat out the new Twilight.
Well, probably, maybe not a blockbuster, but an art house success, I'm going to argue. It stars Keira Knightley as the doomed heroine of the story.
Spoiler alert.
Jude Law is her husband. It's directed by the guy who's worked with Keira Knightley before on movies like Pride and Prejudice and Atonement,
mm-hmm.
Joe Wright. And it is lavishly photographed, gorgeously upholstered. And more importantly, the screenplay is by Tom Stoppard, who's possibly the greatest living playwright in the English language. And working with Joe Wright, he has written for Joe Wright, who had this conceit about moving the action of the story in and out of a physical theater. So they start on stage, and they're in a theater building, and then a door opens, and they'll be in a wheat field. Right,
Bob? It's the weirdest thing
Bob,
in the world.
You liked this as much as I did, right?
Well, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's really ravishing to watch. It's just exquisite. And it's weird because it's so stylized that you think initially that that's going to put the emotions away mm-hmm. and push everything away, and it doesn't do that. It actually heightens them and it makes them.
I was going to say, if anything, it sort of supports and underscores them and makes it. It's a little bit more like an opera. Talk about the choreography aspect of it.
Well, there is a moment where a character simply takes off one coat and puts on another coat, and it requires 30 dancers to do this motion. All he's doing is walking through a room that is filled with people who are working at sort of teletype machines.
Well, they're stamping papers.
They're stamping something,
yeah.
But it becomes this huge choreographed number. I was there at the gala, and somebody asked Keira Knightley how long they'd worked on the ballroom scene, which is a nice scene, mm-hmm. right, and where they're not actually touching each other as they're dancing. And it's quite lovely. And she said, oh, yeah, we rehearsed that. Was it for a month?
You know, I heard, it's funny, because one of the things I heard about this movie, in the place where in Toronto at the film festival you pick up all your best information, which is standing in line, I heard someone say that they found it Baz Luhrmann-y.
A little bit, but not nearly as fantastical.
Yeah,
I was just curious about that comment.
No, it's a fair comment because it is as if he choreographed every moment. There's only one character in the thing who stays still all the way through, and that's Jude Law's character.
Right.
And of course, he's outside of the realm of all these other people who are just swooning in love and all that kind of thing. The idea here is that the aristocrats of that era were sort of always on stage. They dressed very carefully. Everything that they did was presentational in a way. And so what you're doing is you're simply putting that in a theater, which is presentational. Mm-hmm. But some of the effects are just amazing. I got to say, although I think that's going to do really well, I saw the picture that I think is going to be the big box office hit of the Christmas season, which is Silver Linings Playbook.
That's David O. Russell, right?
David O. Russell directed. I'm blanking the actor's name.
Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper.
And Bradley Cooper plays a character who is just getting out of a mental institution because he was undiagnosed bipolar, and he decides he wants to get back together with his wife. And they end up at a dance competition. And the reason I stress the dance competition is that I keep on seeing – this is one of the things that happens when you are at a film festival as opposed to seeing these films one at a time. I keep on seeing all of these movies that use dance. For instance, this picture has a big dance moment in it. There's all the choreography in Anna Karenina. There's another picture called Frances Ha about a woman who is a dancer and a choreographer. And you start seeing all these connections between them and the way that movement is being used to reinforce emotion, which is really interesting.
Frances Ha is directed by Noah Baumbach and was co-written by him and Greta Gerwig, who stars in it. And I really liked that one, too. It's black and white, and it starts off as sort of the first thing you see in this film, literally, is Greta Gerwig tap dancing while her best friend, who is sort of a hipstery-looking girl with glasses, plays a little tiny banjo. And when I saw
Linda's favorite things.
Linda was terrified.
When I saw it, I sort of thought, oh, heavens no, except with a nastier word than heavens. This is not going to be for me, and I was quite concerned. But, you know, over time, it really did grow on me, and I think it has a lot to do with her performance. It has a lot to do with the film not expecting you to find her at all times adorable and appealing. Sometimes she is genuinely awkward and unpleasant. But it did really grow on me a lot, and I was very sympathetic to sort of this feeling that she kind of lacks a home. She both is worried that she's getting old, and yet she also feels like everyone has moved on without her, so she sort of feels like she's still immature. I liked it very much. I liked that one a lot. I've also seen a couple documentaries I really liked. I saw West of Memphis, which is the new documentary about the same case that the Paradise Lost documentaries were made about. And surprisingly enough, it does have some new stuff to add. So for completists sort of about that case, they'll probably be interested in that. I also saw a documentary called How to Make Money Selling Drugs, which is in fact
about
how to make money. It is in fact about how to make money selling drugs. But then it's satirically structured like an instructional video on starting a drug business. This sort of starts off like, has the economy let you down? Are you feeling frustrated? You know, here's a way you can make whatever, whatever. But gradually, it sort of morphs into this very intelligent documentary about drug policy and the implications of drug policy and the implications of the largely criminal approach to it. So I like that one a lot. But we also all saw The Master this morning, which is the P.T. Anderson.
Oh, yes, I was going to say, speaking of unlikable protagonists.
Yeah, Trey was not big into The Master, but I think Bob and I both liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of gorgeous.
As a movie, as a piece of filmmaking and storytelling, it's very nice. It's very handsome. There's a couple of strong performances. But good God, the story, I just couldn't care any less.
Give us a quick synopsis of the story, if you could.
We should explain. Joaquin Phoenix plays a guy who is sort of a strange guy. It's not clear exactly what his history is, but he gets out of the Navy in World War II. And I think also it also appears he's maybe done some, I don't know if it's like Merchant Marine, but some other kind of on the sea stuff. And he meets Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is the charismatic leader of this cult / faith / something something. And they sort of encounter each other. And it's kind of about, is he going to become part of this thing? And for a while, he's traveling with them and with the leader's wife, who is played by Amy Adams, in a very un-Amy Adams-y performance. So I think the Philip Seymour Hoffman character is unlikable, but they're both sort of unlikable.
I was
going to
say, I was talking more about Joaquin Phoenix.
About the Joaquin Phoenix, yeah.
And what you left out the one word that everybody is using to describe this picture inaccurately, as it turns out, but everybody's saying Scientology.
First of all, I did not read a lot of direct Scientology comparisons in it. Also, that kind of makes it feel like it's going to be about this group being a scam or something right. like that. The people who feel that it's going to be a sort of veiled slam on Scientology. It's really not about the validity of the group's beliefs. The group's beliefs are kind of out there. They believe in not just reincarnation, but kind of a very specific kind of using various practices to access all your past memories of your past lives and things like that. But it's really not about that. It's really about this charismatic presence coming into the life of this very scattered
right.
alcoholic guy with his own pained history.
Who is giving an extraordinary – Joaquin Phoenix is giving an absolutely extraordinary performance.
It's great. It's my favorite performance of his.
Yeah. I think he's really great. I saw a picture that you guys haven't seen yet, but you're going to because it's the directing debut of Dustin Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to this festival having heard nothing about this picture. I think most of us did. It's called Quartet. And it's this year's Enchanted April, kind of. It's set in an old age home for musicians. And it's a bunch of opera singers who are getting together. And they are Maggie Smith, Tom Courtney, Billy Connolly, and Pauline Collins. And they are surrounded, these four terrific actors are surrounded by actual opera singers who are in their 90s now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to put on a gala, and you actually hear their voices and you see them. And there is something just sort of fabulous. And Hoffman was talking about the act of using these people, about what it was like to have all of these opera singers. And he said, you know, they're all in their 80s and 90s, and they are they were working 14-hour days for 54 days in a row and would clearly have done it for another 9 weeks if we'd given them a chance. They were so excited to be asked again to do this kind of thing. So it's enormous fun. It's a really rewarding, fun picture. And Maggie Smith is spectacular.
So Linda Holmes, Trey Graham, Bob Mondello, you're at the Toronto International Film Festival. My take as somebody who has actually never been to really a film festival of any kind, it seems to me that this one is more a showcase of movies that are sort of coming out imminently. Am I right? I mean, it seems like when you cover Sundance or you cover Cannes or something like that, that you're seeing a lot of movies that people are not necessarily going to see. Whereas the movies you guys have run down, it seems almost like we're engaging in an Oscar preview.
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about Looper yet, which is due out fairly imminently, which was one of the earliest things I saw, which I quite liked. This is the movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as basically a hitman who is in the business of murdering people who have been sent back in time to be murdered by crime lords in the future, and Bruce Willis as his future self, and how they get tangled up and end up trying either to save or to kill each other.
Same thing with End of Watch is mm-hmm. also playing here and is going to be out very, very soon with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña as cops.
Yeah, there are a little over 300 pictures are showing here at the festival. That includes a lot of shorts.
And each of you are seeing all of them.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
No, I've seen – we've been here for 4 days now, and I've seen 21 full or partial pictures. There are a couple that I left early because – actually, one of them, I went to it. I was in it for 5 minutes, and I thought, wait, I've seen this.
I have seen 20, and that is just ones that I've seen all the way through. So. Mm.
And I have not tallied how many I've seen. I'm not as far ahead as Bob and Linda are, but I've been going to press conferences and receptions to meetings. Greet as well. So I'm working that side of the fence.
You're absolutely right, Stephen, that it is sort of an Oscar preview in the sense that a lot of the chatter here is sort of about what people think is going to get nominated. For example, I saw a movie called Hyde Park on Hudson yesterday, which I didn't actually think was terribly good, but it features Bill Murray playing FDR.
Oh, there you go.
And it's just hard for me to believe that that's not a performance that gets a bunch of nominations for various things because it's Bill Murray playing FDR. And he's good.
He's quite good.
He's good. He does kind of disappear out of Bill Murray-ness into this other thing, which is impressive. As I said, I didn't care for the film that much, but...
So I guess one question that I have about this particular film festival and sort of film festivals in general is if you are not going there for work, is it the sort of thing that you would go to?
Well, it's going to be a really expensive thing to go to if you're trying to do it on the level that
we're doing. But I mean, music fans go to South by Southwest, and it's expensive, but they sure do it.
I don't know that as many people sort of come like from out of town to go here. I'm sure some do. But in terms of fans, lots and lots of people certainly go to individual screenings. I think it's more a one-by-one kind of thing where people will try to see You know, I think there are probably a lot of people in Toronto who try to see a couple of things mm-hmm. when the film festival is here.
But, you know, on Saturday night when we were just sort of looking around as we came out of theaters, it was like Times Square.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen so many people on the street.
It's a very big event.
There certainly are people who make it a vacation destination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the answer is we are unfortunately locked inside our own experience a little bit and have not gotten that much of an opportunity to find out what the normal people are doing.
What the city's like. I mean, the other thing is...
Yeah, square blocks. That's my Toronto motto. But I was reading about kind of this big complex lottery system they have to get tickets. So obviously there is a ton of demand for the tickets for the public screenings, which are not primarily the ones that are attended by people like us.
What are the crowds like there? I mean, it mentioned South by Southwest, and you have, on one hand, you have a bunch of people who are so enthusiastic about music that they are willing to pay thousands of dollars to go, and it's a mix of those people and industry people who are looking at their cell phones. I mean, how much of that are you getting?
There are parallel tracks, so there's a series of screenings that are designed for the press and the industry people that other people can get into once those seats are filled. But then there are the public screenings, which are actually a little more difficult for us to get into. So they, in a way, they almost separate the herds.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, most of the screenings that I've been at have been attended primarily by press and industry people. So I don't, unfortunately, see a lot of people who are just here to see the festival. I do feel like industry people at those screenings substantially outnumber press people. So I feel like I'm attending screenings mostly with people who work for studios or people who work for distributors or people who work for TV outlets that are going to purchase the rights to,
right.
you know, anybody, people who distribute DVDs. There are all kinds of industry people. So I feel like I'm sitting primarily in a gigantic crowd of show business people.
And just for fun, I went to a couple of the galas so that I could see the stars because in my line of work, you don't ever get to see the stars. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of weird. I'm sitting in dark theaters all the time, but I don't actually see them. So I saw Keira Knightley and I saw Dustin Hoffman and Maggie Smith and all those folks at a couple of the big screenings. They're held in a big place that is called the Elgin, and it must have 2,000 seats. It's mm-hmm. an enormous old vaudeville house that they're using. The sound in there is spectacular. I mean, it's amazing the way that it bounces off. And the crowds are very enthusiastic. One of the things that I love about the crowds here, when you're seeing it with just critics, we sit there at the beginning as mm-hmm. they show us the same five commercials over and over and over again. But when you see it with a crowd that is actually from Toronto, when the piracy note comes up at the very beginning, everybody goes, "Arr!" Which is hilarious.
This is true.
Yeah. So. But I mean, honestly, if I could only go back and see one thing from this festival and just watch it again right now, it would be the Joss Whedon Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah. Okay. I have a very specific question about that, because I do think that there are plenty of people in the pop culture happy hour demographic who are interested in this film. Joss Whedon's version of Much Ado About Nothing, the Shakespeare play.
Yes, filmed in 12 days at his house with basically his repertory company.
And in black and white.
And in black and white.
Okay, well, here's my question. This play takes a weird tonal turn in Act 4 in the wedding scene. And
yes,
every
indeed.
Time I've seen it, you can feel the audience sort of seizing up. And
we just talked about this last
night.
Yeah,
what is hilarious is I was asking this exact same question. How did he finesse that bit?
Okay.
How did he finesse it, guys?
Let me explain what it is. Okay, so a 400-year-old spoiler alert. the ingenue, the heroine named Hero, is about to marry Claudio. And through a series of wacky misunderstandings and deceit, she is falsely accused of being inconstant, or at least less than virginal. And this causes Claudio to reject her. Now, what's interesting about this scene is that to do what it needs to do from a plot perspective, all that has to happen is that the wedding breaks up. But Shakespeare goes far beyond that. And so Claudio rejects her, and then her father totally lights into her in a way that is really brutal and lengthy, and he calls her foul-tainted flesh, comparing her to spoiled meat, and he says...
And he essentially threatens to beat the crap out of her if this turns out to be true.
In some productions I've seen, he actually hits her. So, I mean, it's if anybody can finesse that kind of a tonal wonk, it would be Whedon. What does Whedon do?
He takes some pains to set that moment up with a couple of very precisely observed bits in earlier scenes. But then in that scene, he has Claudio break after he makes the accusation and rejects her. Claudio breaks and is desperately upset. What he does is cruel. The way he stages the breakup in front of the entire wedding party is undeniably cruel. But then his emotional distress is so apparent that you begin to understand at least a little how he can be that awful to her.
The other thing is that Claudio is set up to be, I feel, in this production, a little bit insecure, a little bit nerdy. He's played by Fran Kranz, who, if you know Joss Whedon's stable of folks, was in Dollhouse and also was just recently the stoner in The Cabin in the Woods, who has a little bit of a hapless quality to him and is not exactly a dashing Shakespearean hero through and through. And so to me, he has a bit of vulnerability that I think helps that be a little more understandable, that mostly he just feels terribly, terribly hurt and fooled, because it plays to me like, you have now put me in a position where I'm going to be forced to reject you if this turns out to be true. How could you do this? That kind of thing.
Good, good. Okay, well, I was curious about that because that's what a director brings to this text, you know, making it psychologically real when you're dealing with events that don't necessarily scan to a modern sensibility. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I just thought it was doing exactly what it needed to be doing. And, you know, when you're at a festival like this, you see a lot of stuff that's fairly heavy. And to me, going into this yesterday morning, it was the first thing I saw on yesterday morning, which was Sunday. And it was so what I needed to see, and it was so where I needed to be at that point. And it was a lovely break from some pretty tough stuff that I have seen here. So.
I think Trey felt the same way about Cloud Atlas.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we went to the Cloud Atlas screening.
This is the Wachowskis.
Saturday morning.
The Wachowskis and Tom Tykwer. Oh, my.
Epic. Epic is what it is.
Yeah. How long is Cloud Atlas?
Seven hours. Oh, sorry.
2 hours and 45 minutes.
Two hours, I believe.
It feels like seven.
Yeah.
That's not fair. It is a very lively piece of work. That work is not the word I was initially considering there.
Yeah.
It's very special.
So Linda, you touched on fun. You touched on on a sort of a fresh and lively experience. I mean, when you think of film festivals, you think lots of dour movies involving people waving to people on trains and whatever.
Yes.
At least this is what I think of when I think of serious movies.
That's Anna Karenina.
Yeah.
Under trains.
I saw one like that today. It stars Hugh Laurie, and it's called Mr. Pip, and I'm not even going to talk about it because it's just going to make me upset. But it is based on a novel of the same name, and I saw one like that today, one of those, like, oh, I can't take any more of this. Oh,
yeah. Okay, well, so a quick round of fun movies.
Stories We Tell, Sarah Polley's documentary about her own family. Don't let anyone tell you about this picture. Just watch it because you don't want to know the surprises.
Agreed. I would point also to a movie called The Sessions, which stars Helen Hunt and John Hawkes, who is in Winter's Bone and Martha Marcy, May Marlene. And that's about a guy who has polio or had polio as a child. And
I'm laughing already.
Sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it?
and sort of lives on a gurney. But he decides that he is going to lose his virginity. And Helen Hunt plays a sex surrogate. And I know it sounds like a laugh a minute already. But it actually is very funny. It's actually one of the more comedic films that I've seen here. And William H. Macy plays his sort of shocked and surprised priest. It's very good.
So, Trey, give me a fun movie.
Well, I'm going to give you this advisedly because I haven't seen it yet. I've tried to see it twice and been shut out both times, but I'm going to see it immediately after this taping, and that is Seven Psychopaths. It's a black comedy from Martin McDonagh. It comes highly recommended. Stars people like Colin Farrell, Sam Rockwell, Christopher Walken, Woody Harrelson, Tom Waits, Gabourey Sidibe. It is about a struggling writer trying to finish a screenplay, an unemployed actor and part-time dog thief, and somebody's dog gets stolen and bad things happen.
So Trey's going in feeling very positive.
Yeah.
And now of course, you know, by the time that this episode is available, Trey will have seen this movie and presumably written about it on the NPR Monkey See blog, which you can find at npr.org/monkeysee.
That's right.
And of course, we encourage everyone to take to our Facebook page and talk about movies that you are excited about seeing that may or may not be playing at the Toronto International Film Festival.
It's true.
Hey, Toronto is in a country called Canada.
That is true.
Now, Toronto, is that anywhere near Vancouver?
No. Absolutely not. Absolutely. Our engineer here is
giving us a thumbs down.
Our engineer is giving you a hearty thumbs down.
I think of Canada as the Midwest of the North. Because I lived in...
The record show that Stephen Thompson is being performatively ignorant.
That's right. It's true.
Spare me your emails. I know. I lived in Madison, Wisconsin for 16 years, and publicists would be like, well, we got this great show coming up. It's in your area. It's in St. Louis.
Yeah, we are enjoying the company of Canadians.
I would imagine so. And I like lots of things from Canada, and we figured, you know, while we were in Canada, we would do a really quick kind of miniature segment on things we like from Canada. So I'm going to start with the man next to me, nuts to you people who are actually in Canada at the moment, Glenn Weldon.
Well, I mean, there's a long list here, and just if we just want to tick off a few, and if you guys have anything you particularly want to say about any of these, just stop me. So, I mean, you got to start with The Littlest Hobo, of course, right? Littlest Hobo, a children's series about a dog, a little German Shepherd that goes from town to town helping people. As dogs want to do.
Again, I have to say you're entertaining our Canadian host.
The you can't do that on television, of course. Mm-hmm. RoboCop the series, totally made, produced in Canada. La Femme Nikita the series. Slings and Arrows, we've talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes.
Due South, everybody. If you talk about Slings and Arrows, you got to talk with Paul Gross and Due
South. You bet.
Degrassi High.
Excellent.
I was a little too old for this.
I want to thank you, Glenn, for fitting in some Mounties, because yeah, that's right.
The Red Green Show, which, you guys know The Red Green Show?
No.
It's vaguely ringing a bell.
It's on PBS. It's, it showed in PBS here in the States, or at least it was. It's pretty much the Canadian equivalent of Prairie Home Companion, I think.
There you go.
If you think Prairie Home Companion's funny, you will think Red Green is funny, and I'll leave it at that. And then a show from 1973 called The Star Lost, which you haven't heard about.
Nope.
But it's this awesome, unbelievably low-budget thing starring Keir D'Elia, who was in 2001,
sure,
with a massive porn stash trying to save humanity. And, of course, I think in the world there are Kids in the Hall people and SCTV people.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
You're an
SCTV exactly right.
person.
I am an inveterate SCTV. I love Kids in the Hall a lot, but SCTV was just great. What's the best SCTV sketch ever? I'm going to have to go with Identical Cheese Hostesses, which was a parody of the Patty Duke show opening, and we will have a link to that because it's amazing. The Bobby Vinton Show. Can't stop there. And, of course, Check It Out. Remember Check It Out? Don Adams as a supermarket manager. No? You're looking at me blankly.
What planet is he on?
Glenn is giving this incredibly comprehensive list of things that are not important to Canadians. And I guarantee you that, like, every Canadian person who hears this is going to be like, you didn't name any of our actual good shows.
But what of The Tragically Hip?
What about the first five seasons of The X-Files, of course, filmed in Vancouver? And, of course, Rumble in the Bronx.
Please tell me that this podcast is going to go up after I'm out of the country. We're going to be killed.
Oh, you're terrible. Can I be slightly more serious?
Sure.
I would just like to observe that Canada, you know, can be forgiven for giving us the Bieber and Celine Dion because they also gave us Katie Lang.
That's true.
And Neil Young, for God's sake.
Oh, music-wise.
Music,
I mean.
It's...
And Glenn Gould.
You'll be nice to Justin Bieber. He tweeted me.
That's true, he did.
That's true.
Not many of us can say that.
Glenn Gould.
Uh-huh.
All right, I'm going to read...
Now we're just
Shania Twain,
Canadians
Leonard Cohen, Nickelback.
I'm going to read... I'm going to read a lengthy list, real quickly, though. I'm going to read a lengthy list of Canadian actors, and I want you to tell me, when I am done, who on this list is the most Canadian? Because there is only one right answer, and you will be judged. All right. Victor Garber, Robert Goulet, Paul Anka, Pamela Anderson, Raymond Burr, Conrad Bain, Mr. Drummond, Nev Campbell, Nathan Fillion, Seth Rogen, Anna Paquin, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Reynolds, the Ryans, Jim Carrey, Michael Cera, Hayden Christensen, Alicia Cuthbert, Yvonne DiCarlo, Brendan Fraser, Colm Feore, a great Canadian character actor with a name that's fun to say, Tom Green, Lauren Green, Graham Green, the Greens, Corey Haim, Phil Hartman, Michael Ironside, Joshua Jackson, Margot Kidder, Taylor Kitsch, I didn't realize that.
I did not know that.
Evangeline Lilly, Donald Logue, Howie Mandel, Eric McCormick.
If you don't pick the right one, you're an idiot. There's like 50 names.
No, there's only one answer. There's only one answer.
There's only one right answer. The right answer is Michael Sacks.
No. Leslie Nielsen.
That's what I was going to say, too.
Leslie Nielsen. Sandra Oh, Matthew Perry, Sarah Polley, Jason Priestley, Keanu Reeves, Carolyn Ray, Christopher Plummer, Saul Rubinek, character actor Saul Rubinek, William Shatner, Kobe Smulders. Of the Saskatoon Smulders, Jewel State.
You laugh at Kobe Smulders, but they have actually made great hay on How I Met Your Mother of the fact that she's Canadian, because her character is also Canadian and hangs out at the Hoser Hut, I think it's called.
The Hoser Hut.
The Sutherlands, Fee and Pear, Kiefer and Donald, Alan Thicke, Emily Van Camp, Vanity. Now, that is the least Canadian person on this list. Yeah. Having one name, not Canadian. Having it be that very un-Canadian trait of vanity and also rocking out like she does. And then finally, Rufus Wainwright. Who is the most Canadian person on this list? You say Michael Cera, yes?
It's Michael Cera.
It's not.
Alan Thicke is pretty Canadian.
Alan Thicke is on the list.
He's on the list you just read. Yes.
How can you not say William Shatner?
Shatner was...
What is the quintessential Canadian personality trait? It's not politeness. Politeness is part of it. What is quintessentially
the
Canadian?
The way they pronounce about?
Yeah, and duller. No.
Please stop.
I love Canada. I'm about to praise things from Canada. I love it.
I put it to you. There are four people in the finals who make the finals. Michael Cera, Brendan Fraser, Conrad Bain, Alan Thicke. Well, the most Canadian person.
You did punch up Conrad Bain when you said
his name. Is Brendan Fraser. Okay. Because affability is the quintessential Canadian trait, and that guy...
We're going to test that, aren't we?
Is able to aff like nobody else.
Boy, that was a longer quiz than vegan restaurant or cologne and perfume.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I was actually going to say Kobe Smulders, but now I don't know. Glenn confused me, and now I just am done.
Brendan,
I'm going to have to go with Canada's greatest contribution to world culture, and that is poutine.
Sure,
that's also a thing. Now,
those of you who do not know what poutine is, it is French fries smothered with gravy in which cheese curds have been warmed up. It is the food of the gods.
Remember what I said about Canada being the Midwest of the North.
That's true.
Quick things I want to praise. I mean, I've talked on this show before about my intense love of Project Runway Canada.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Which is a great choice.
It is the Canadian spinoff of Project Runway. It is just as good, if not better. Now, it does not have Tim Gunn, but it does have Brian Bailey, who is amazing. It is hosted by Iman, who is, to steal a phrase from Glenn, bat guano crazy. It only lasted two seasons. You can find them on your YouTubes and whatnot in a more or less legal manner.
Canada's Next Top Model was also good.
I have not seen Canada's Next Top Model, but really, honestly, Project Runway Canada is about as good as reality TV gets. Also, got to throw out a few bands here. I mean, we mentioned briefly Neil Young, obviously, but a band called Stars that I really, really, really love. Lots of just wrenching boy girl confessional string section, tear your heart out of your chest.
You do love them.
They're really, really great. They've got a bunch of fantastic records. They've got a really good new one called The North. Also, of course, you got to mention Metric and the new Pornographers and Broken Social Scene and Feist and that whole round of wonderful, wonderful, wonderful music from Canada. But I thought I would throw a special mention of Stars just because they have a new record out.
I feel like what I have to mention is we're only kidding. We don't actually think this is all the good things from Canada. We're only kidding. Please don't hate us. Like I said, I still have to get through customs.
Barely grazed the many, many virtues of Canada,
It's absolutely true. We're mostly just being very, very silly, as you can see.
We wanted to fill out the hour.
We're a little punchy.
As always, as I mentioned about movies, if you can please take to our Facebook page, try not to yell at us for besmirching the good name of Canada, a country we love. Go to facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to the final segment, as it is our final segment every week. What is making us happy? I am going to start with Bob Mondello.
And I'm going to stick with movies because this is the time of year when I no longer have to watch summer pictures. And you can't imagine how happy that makes a movie critic. It's such a relief that I don't have any more blockbusters for a little while. We will get them. They're coming. But I've been spending this week just thinking, and none of this has a vampire in it.
Yes, or and not a lot of explosions in the kind that I've been at. There are some here with explosions and
no, it's just been it's been a joy to be thinking about all the pictures that are coming out between now and the end of the year, which will actually give me something to sink my teeth into every once in a while. That was my
I heard somebody say today, I've seen a lot of things, nothing that I've hated, nothing that I've loved. And I was like, you are doing it wrong. You are doing it wrong. You can't find anything you love here, then you are in the wrong place.
All right. Well, Linda Holmes, you just spoke. Hey, what's making you happy this week?
Sorry, it's hard to break the habit. I acknowledge that it is in some ways a violation of the Zaxxon rule. But at our hotel where we are staying in the bar is a bartender.
Oh, good for you.
Who I think is basically the best person ever. Who, as I said to Trey on the first night we were here, I have no idea what he would have done with his life if he had not been a bartender, because he is such an incredibly gregarious, outgoing, friendly, odd, cool bartender. And then the next night when I was there, I found out that, in fact, when he is not a bartender, he is a magician. So he then proceeded to make me laugh my head off with some card tricks. And it was so random and so unexpected and so out of nowhere to have the bartender absolutely blow me away with particularly one of the first one of the two that he did. I was so shocked that I just could not stop giggling because it was such a great trick and it so completely got me.
Is this a working magician?
Yes, and he said he teaches too.
Yeah, he's got a website. He teaches. He does corporate events. He does parties.
Well, and he'll teach you a trick for.
And you know,
the gentleman's name?
I was going to say I can't remember. His name is Randall, but I don't remember his last name. But when you come to Toronto, if you stay at the Marriott Residence Inn on what's our street?
Wellington
downtown.
Go to the bar and ask for Randall.
I expect by the time this show goes live for you guys to have gotten this guy's name and website so we can actually plug him on the Facebook.
His name is Randall. He's the bartender, and he did card tricks, and it was absolutely what was making me happy this week.
You know what would make Randall happy? If you gave his name on our podcast.
So many things have made me tired this week. This was something that just made me completely happy.
All right. Randall at the Marriott Residence Inn on Wellington. Trey Graham, what's making you happy, buddy?
I'm just sticking with movies, too. You guys know how I love a good costume drama. So among the movies that I've seen that we have not talked about, Midnight's Children, the adaptation, Deepa Mehta's adaptation of the Salman Rushdie novel. Really gorgeous to look at. An entirely Indian cast. Gorgeous landscapes. Reasonable tension. It doesn't sag. It's long, as you might expect from a movie adapted from Salman Rushdie, but it's just gorgeous, and it's sad, and it's a little mystical. Also, a new BBC Films version of Great Expectations with a number of enormous talents, not least of them Ralph Fiennes, but if you can imagine Helena Bonham Carter as Miss Havisham, I encourage you to get your tickets now, because it's only a little eccentric. And the charming Jeremy Irvin as the adult Pip.
Excellent. Thank you, Trey Graham. Hey, Glenn Weldon, what do you got this week? What's making you happy?
Oh, Carol Channing's making me happy. She always making me happy. You kidding? Me? Carol Channing? There's a documentary called Carol Channing Larger Than Life. It's, you know, you go into it thinking you know what you're in for, and you do, but it's great. She's great. She's smart. She's funny. It's a documentary that is a lot of fun. That's all I'm going to say.
Where can I find it?
It's at
carolchanningthemovie.com. There are trailers on YouTube.
Yeah, and it's also streaming. It's also streaming on Netflix or one of those, possibly streaming on Comcast or something like that. It's out there. It's great.
Carol Channing documentary.
Carol Channing
contain
documentary.
Contain multitudes, Glenn Weldon.
Sometimes I'm too stereotypical even for me.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I'll try to be brief. First of all, what's making me happy? The fact that because you guys are at the Toronto Film Festival this week, none of us had to watch the MTV VMAs.
Yeah.
There you go.
I seriously,
I'm here for you, buddy.
Like, they aired and I thought, should I? No. No, I shouldn't watch them.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I did not have to. Thank you. Thank you, Toronto International Film Festival. The other thing is that I finally only, like, what, 4 years too late, finally dipped my toe into the pool of Archer.
Yay.
It is so unbelievably funny. I absolutely love this show. It is a sign of my thundering ignorance of everything relating to the TV show Archer on FX, that my immediate reaction upon watching it was, this is really great, but oh my God, they are ripping off Frisky Dingo. Of course, very quickly picked up on the fact that Adam Reed is the man behind both of those shows. It's a kind of filthier, kind of smuttier Frisky, where Frisky Dingo is you know, a little sillier and a little more more violent. And I'm sorry, this is more, well, it's smuttier. But the writing is wonderful. And of course, I mean, Glenn is nodding over here. The cast of this show is just the Glenn Weldon podcast all-stars. H. John Benjamin, Aisha Tyler, Chris Parnell, Jessica Daniels. It's just a who's who of incredibly funny people. Wonderful show on FX. There's 4 years worth of it. Archer. Love it. You know what, Holmesy? You seem like you've been chomping at the bit to host, and you're, you know, I'm going to let you wrap this up.
Oh, thank you, Stephen, and thanks to all of you for listening. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. That's Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, G-I-T-N-E-R. You can follow our esteemed producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T. T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. We, of course, once again want to thank the CBC for hosting us here in Toronto.
And our engineer, Carlos Van Leeuwen, in the studio.
Indeed. And,
Bob Mondello, who's not on Twitter.
And, of course, obviously, Bob Mondello, who you cannot follow on Twitter, but you can listen to on All Things Considered, where he's frequently heard to opine about movies and all manner of things. Thank you so much, Bob.
It was great.
And thanks to all of you for listening. And thank you, Stephen and Glenn and Jess, back in D.C.
We miss you, Tara.
Come home.
Oh, I miss the heck out of you, buddy. All right, well, and thanks to all of you for listening, as always. And thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
And we will see you next week.